Everything you know about health is about to change. Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Sometimes people suffer, not from lack of faith, but from lack of knowledge. This is the show that changes that. If you are tired of being sick, tired of not getting answers, tired of spinning in circles, then listen closely to the next 30 minutes. For healing is not a mystery. It is a miracle that you were designed to experience. It takes hard work and real knowledge. It takes patience and time. It takes the education this show can provide. So, get it straight today. Here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. Begin today's show with a little story. Not really a story. Little incident this week. Lady was on her way to the office. She got lost. She was within 1 mile of the office. It took 15 minutes for her to remember how to get there. We almost got in the car to find her where she was to bring her. Reason? You already know the reason. She couldn't remember the directions. Didn't know how to work a GPS, but literally couldn't remember the directions. Didn't want to tell us she was lost, so she only called a few times. But it took her, she was within a few, I don't know, half a mile of the office, and it took a full 15 minutes to get there. Has that ever happened to you? Do you live with brain fog? Lots of people do. Today's show, we're going to get into the word brain fog. Now, I don't mean you have a disease. Brain fog is not a disease. Those of you that have diseases, those of you who know people with diseases, well, it stems from the same issues. Only by the time it's a disease, you're into a different level of it. Whether you can't remember where you are because you've got senility or you've got early stages of Alzheimer's, or whatever you've got that's been characterized as a disease, it begins with things that we're going to discuss today. So today's show is really about cognitive health, but you understand it as brain fog. All right. Number one, let's discuss the brain, something special about the brain. It's called the blood-brain barrier. Now, if you can get to the website, as always, that's straighttalk.cc. Take a look at picture number one. And essentially what the blood-brain barrier means is that the brain is only semi-permeable to what's in the blood. The brain protects itself in special ways. So the capillary system leading to the brain has an extra dimension within it that protects it or filters out what would normally get into the brain cells. This is called the blood-brain barrier. This is of special interest in pharmacology because lots of drugs that you want to get into your brain so that you can help the brain cognitively or with brain tumors, lots of those drugs you can't get through the blood-brain barrier. So everybody studies this. It's not just a holistic concern or something that we note of importance to natural doctors, but this is of extreme importance in pharmacology. We can't deliver the drug to the brain because we can't get it through the blood-brain barrier. Often, of course, that's important because lots of stuff the brain doesn't want or need and is protected by because of this extra ring around the capillary system that protects the brain cells, the astrocytes, the glial cells, so on and so forth, from getting spooked. So, blood-brain barrier of key significance, and we'll tie that in later. Your cognitive issues, your blood sugar issues, your issues with, well, what you'd otherwise call brain fog can begin at a very young age. It's not just for older people. At a very young age, simply because at a very young age, lots of kids know what it is to get an insulin spike. Now, you got to make a distinction here, and this is important, between this idea that sugar is bad for the brain because the blood sugar goes high. While that's true, young people aren't going to suffer from that. And this is where you got to get a little education. Insulin is the chemical that the pancreas secretes to push the sugar in the blood. As it gets too high, it pushes the sugar in the blood into the cell. And that's exactly what insulin's there for, to reduce blood sugar after you take too much in. Now, when kids do that, they secrete often way more insulin than they're supposed to stabilize their blood sugar. When they can't do that anymore, or when the insulin doesn't work anymore, well, this is when you're in middle age and you're looking at type 2 diabetes or pre-diabetic states. But I don't want to get to that yet. I want to point out that cognitive dysfunction, as early as kids in class taking exams, studying and cramming it in at the last second, are often having blood sugar spikes that they're compensating with insulin spikes. And the high insulin does what? Some of you should know. The minute you live in existence where you're constantly pushing your insulin up, even if it regulates your blood sugar, at some point that high insulin begins to inflame the brain. Now, later on, 50 years later, you're looking at disease. But early on, what you're looking at is brain fog. Some people are better than others at dealing with this issue. Some people regulate their blood sugar, throw too much insulin into the blood, and because they have very powerful adrenal glands, they quell or suppress the inflammation very easily. So you're going to have people that can respond, even as kids, to these high insulin spikes because of these high-carb diets that moms try to get kids off of, but that kids generally circumvent in sneaky little ways in the cafeteria at lunch, go to take the exams, are practically falling asleep in their exams because their insulin's spiking so high. Some kids can compensate, some kids can't. Which kid you are, well, that's what the show is about. Critical to understand that adrenaline and cortisol compensate people for high insulin. I have to put this, well, maybe not at the top of the list, but one of the big three. We are a carb country. We have issues with meat. Some of those issues are very well founded. And on the lower end of the economic scale, like the high school cafeteria, carbs abound. Carbs are easy. Carbs are accessible. Carbs don't spoil with preservatives, so on and so forth. Carbs are everywhere. Now, if you've got brain fog when you're a kid for reasons, and of course, these reasons go undetected. Why? Because nobody checks blood sugar. But even if you check blood sugar, if you're really catching my point, you won't find this problem when you check blood sugar. You're going to find this problem when you look at insulin secretion. This is a real important distinction. And you don't know it until you get off sugar. So, top of the list, especially if you're a kid, especially if you're a teenager, if you've got academic concerns, if you've got the kind of job where your brain has to be super sharp, and you're under 30, and you don't understand why you go in and out of brain fog, look at insulin. And the best way to do it, because the testing for insulin is difficult. Testing for insulin is something nobody wants to do. You have to go to special labs for it. Often your medical doctor doesn't want to order the test. Of course, you can go to Life Extension. You can go to request a test. You can go to independent labs and do it yourself. But by and large, measuring insulin has a better solution, and that is get off carbs. If you've got brain fog, the first thing you do is go to a relatively carb-free diet. Now, once done, you'll be able to contrast, and that's what so much of this is about. You're going to go into a contrast between what you suffer on the carb and the way your brain starts to feel over time. Now, there's a caveat to that, and that caveat is it may take a week to 2 weeks to a month to recover from another aspect of this issue, and that is When you switch off carbs because your blood sugar or and insulin starts running too high, when you switch off carbs, your liver takes a week to 2 to 3 weeks to actually begin to engineer the enzymes required to give you energy or to compensate your blood sugar for the carb deficiency by burning fat. Let me say that again. There are enzymes in the liver that you have to have enough of that transform the fat to sugar so you can stabilize your blood sugar in the absence of carbs. It's a process called gluconeogenesis. This is why if you've ever gone paleo, if you've ever gone off carbs for a while, you begin to notice an issue of fatigue the first day or two or three. People tell you, get off carbs, you're going to get stronger. You're going to get smarter. You're going to have more energy. And you get off carbs, and for the first week or two, maybe for longer than you can endure, you feel extra fatigue. And everybody else is telling you you're going to have energy and you have fatigue. Here's the reason, and it relates to this issue with brain fog. Anytime you use carbohydrate to fuel your cells and you go off carbs, your body has to sustain its blood sugar by burning fat. Now, that's a good thing, but you have to give it time in the liver to build the enzymes and to start building those enzymes in sufficient quantity, especially if your liver is sluggish, can take a week, sometimes 2 weeks, sometimes a month. All right, so brain fog, what to do about it? Number one, especially if you're under the age of 30, and definitely if you're over the age of 30. I say under the age of 30 because it's the first place you look is to high blood sugar. But don't be deceived by good blood sugar numbers and high insulin, because the insulin is really the thing that causes the inflammation up in the brain. And that's the beginning of brain fog and degenerative disease way down the line. Now, if you do get off the carbs, give it a little bit of time. Give it a week or two or three. Okay. If this is the first time you're listening to the show, get on the website. I've got some pictures. That's straighttalk.cc, not .com. That's straighttalk.cc. That's with two T's and not .com, .cc. All right. Let's get into other causes. Let's get into cortisol. Now, cortisol is a hormone secreted from the adrenal glands. And the adrenal glands sit on top of the kidneys. Much ado about inflammation. Everybody's pointing today to inflammation as the cause of lots of diseases. An article the other day, Alzheimer's disease is not caused by plaques. It's caused by inflammation. And really, the public's got to get hip to what everybody's talking about. Inflammation is simply the beginning of damage to the cells caused by hundreds of different variables, all of which begin breakdowns in the cell that will eventually create diseases, generally where your genetic weaknesses are. Inflammation is a prerequisite to almost every disease. So the notion that now we're studying disease more closely and deciding that inflammation drives the disease, as in Alzheimer's, not beta amyloid plaques, but inflammation causes the disease, this is just a play on words. Seems like we're getting somewhere and discovering something. We're discovering nothing. Common sense has always told us that before you get the physical effects of a disease, a symptom, or before you can measure destruction, inflammatory processes have been going on for many, many years before. And this applies to just about every disease there is. That being said, what did God give us to suppress inflammation? Oh, you know this from sports. You sprain your ankle, you've got to get out there and play the game anyway because it's the championship, and you get a shot of cortisone. Cortisone is like cortisol. Basically, cortisone is synthetic cortisol. On that basis, you have to understand that people secrete it in varying degrees because they need to or because they've got sufficient amounts of cortisol in reserve. So how much cortisol is circulating in your bloodstream is relative to how much chemical, biomechanical, emotional stress you're under. And that stress causing cortisol secretion may hit the point where you can't secrete cortisol anymore because your gland, your adrenal gland, is way too exhausted. So you got to understand, in terms of the function of the neurons of your brain, we have to look at inflammatory processes as mitigated by cortisol. Now let's put point one and two together. If your insulin's constantly spiking, it's going to inflame your brain. And what your body's going to do is throw its reserve of cortisol up to the brain to quell the effects, the inflammatory effects of insulin or high blood sugar. But we're just discussing the cortisol part. Why? Because constant large secretions of cortisol have their own problems. High cortisol, and we know this, shrinks the brain. High cortisol causes electrolyte depletion, which in essence is critical to brain function. High cortisol causes many bad side effects in the body, but it literally shrinks the brain. The brain fails its anabolic state. Things don't grow when the cortisol is high. If your cortisol is high, you go from anabolism or an anabolic growth phase, you go into a catabolic state. Some people know this. It's your common sense. Under high stress, haven't you ever seen people just waste away? Under high periods of stress, you've noticed that some people simply lose a lot of weight. They look gaunt. They look tired, so on and so forth. And what you're left with is high cortisol levels and a deficient, depleted body. Now, they've done lots of studies. There's a great 60-minute documentary from National Geographic called Stress, the Silent Killer. And lots of people in the neurophys and in neurology, they take pictures of the brain, and then they take pictures of the brain under stress over time. And what you see invariably, as you stress the animal or the person, they've done this with people also, as you stress the animal or the person, and you take successive pictures with the MRI, you see the brain shrinking. You see the ventricles of the brain. I'll get a little technical. The ventricles of the brain, the pumping mechanism inside the brain, that which makes the cerebral spinal fluid and that which pumps the cerebral spinal fluid, the ventricles of the brain. Under stress, the ventricles increase in size and the brain tissue shrinks and atrophies. Now, they've done this many, many, many times. This is kind of like law in neuroanatomy, neurophysiology, neuroscience, so on and so forth. National Geographic does a great example of displaying this. So what happens to your average middle-aged person at 40 or 50? The stress levels go up. You've got family, you're trying to make a living, maybe you're a little older. And so there's issues just because of age in general. Your stress goes up. And often there's less efficiency, less time, and so your diet suffers. So look at your sequela. You understand the sequela, the consequences of brain fog long term, are neurodegenerative conditions. But whether that happens or not, before it happens, you just know it is cloudy thinking. You're a block away from the office, but you can't figure out how to get there. Happens to lots of people. Think of the challenge at 50 or 60 or 70 of going back to high school or college when you had to look at something once or twice and remember it. Think of the challenge of that. Take a look at that realistically and ask yourself, would you be up to the task? You should be. There's really no reason for that brain to have degenerated to the point where that would be exceedingly challenging. And yet, for most people, they drown. So one, we look at blood sugar. Two, we look at insulin. Three, we look at high cortisol. Those neurons are highly metabolic. Your brain cells are turning over all the time. In other words, they're being broken down and built up and broken down and built up. When in the balance of trade, they're more broken down than they're more built up, you've got issues. You've got a breakdown, which is an inflammatory process. And that's what high cortisol will do. So sustained high cortisol, big consideration, and we'll call this sustained high cortisol from stress, emotional stress, anxiety. But that's not the only reason. Before we say high cortisol, which by definition will atrophy the brain, we could say high cortisol because of high insulin. We could say high cortisol because of high emotional stress. So let's look at high emotional stress. Most of you remember the high school years as years where you were carefree. Translated into the physiology of the body, that carefreeness meant low stress, low cortisol. Now that changes over time for most people. And for most people, the emotional impact of sustained anxiety, the impact of sustained anxiety on the body means high cortisol. So you may not have high cortisol from the diet. You may be producing high cortisol because you live a high anxiety life, because you never really learned to relax. And now at 40 or 50 years old, you've got real causes for emotional anxiety. So they all work together, and yet you have to look at them individually. Everything we're going to list today siphons on down to an inflammatory process where the neurons begin to degenerate. Not to disease, but just enough to give you brain fog. And as those neurons degenerate, what does that mean? It means immune system cells see the degeneration and you trigger that immuno-inflammatory response, the causes of which high blood sugar, causes of which high insulin, causes of which high emotional anxiety. Which means what? I'll tell you what. Most of the people you see with senile dementia were obsessive compulsive worry warts 50 years earlier. If you lined up all the people today in the city of Los Angeles, Southern California, that are sitting in homes, decaying to the ravages of senile dementia, let's not even talk about Alzheimer's or Parkinson's, just plain old senile dementia. You're talking about people who 50 years earlier clearly had patterns where they were losing or lost their ability to reduce their stress. So if you really want to understand brain fog and you want to link it to anxiety, you have to link the word anxiety to knowing how to reduce your stress. Now, I don't think I've done a show in 5 years that hasn't tried to give perspective on that, because everybody's got a different version of it. And I constantly emphasize to you that reducing the stress has to be done in a way where you cross critical thresholds. So if you chalk off reducing stress to having a glass of red wine at night because you read in some magazine that that's a stress blocker, or take a walk after dinner, or read fairy tales instead of horror books, or spend more time with family, take up hobbies. These are the kinds of things that we throw around that, honestly, I don't think cut it. You have to have a feasible, our culture needs a feasible way to reduce stress so that it crosses into physiological responses. If John Q says he's learning to reduce stress, I want to see the blood pressure drop. If John Q says he's learned to reduce stress, I want to see him losing less magnesium in his urine. High cortisol from stress causes loss of electrolyte. If you make the claim that you're less stressed and that you're learning to manage it, I want to see the changes in your blood pressure. See the changes in your sleep patterns. When you talk about dementia, when you talk about brain fog, when you talk about disease cognitively, and when you talk about the link of that to emotionally based stress, and thus a person's ability to relax becomes of supreme importance, you've got to use tangible, credible, dramatic ways to measure that. Otherwise, it gets chalked off to silly things that may be a step in the right direction, but don't really work. So when I say reduce your anxiety, and when I say lots of people who don't, if you took all the people today and lined them up with senile dementia, you'd see people who had severe obsessive compulsive anxiety problems 40 or 50 years before they ever had a cognitive issue. That's big. High insulin is big. High blood sugar is big. Understanding that for whatever reason, as your cortisol is spiking, just the presence of that hormone in and of itself will shrink your brain. And looking to causes of it, learning to relax is huge. But learning to relax, in the way I define it, is the key. Then we get to the word sleep. Now, sleep's a whole other animal. Sleep is tied into every single function of the body. Yeah, I know. You got to get your 4 straight hours or 5 straight hours. You know that you should not have interrupted sleep. I don't even want to deal with that. If you're new to the show, perhaps sleep is big news. If you listen to this show regularly, as many do, you already know a straight 6, a straight 7. Not interrupted by inflammation, not interrupted by hot flashes, not even talking about that. If you evolve people as they sleep, if you evolve people in the evolution of health as people sleep, you'll see a change in the quality of sleep. There's something called deep sleep. See? You may not get up to urinate. You may not get up because you have a hot flash. You may stay in bed and not get up to urinate, just lean over and do it. Some of the men have ways of doing that because they know it's not good to get up. But I'm not talking about any of that. I'm talking about the point at which straight sleep becomes deep sleep. You all remember deep sleep. Most of us know what deep sleep means, and almost all of us lose deep sleep. Somewhere along the line, even if we say we sleep okay, we've lost deep sleep. Deep sleep is when you close your eyes, when you wake up 7, 8 hours later, and you don't know where you've been. In fact, it's a little spooky that first moment you open your eyes because you don't know where you are. You don't know where you've been. It happens so fast, and yet you bounce out of bed with energy.
I'm not mincing words here. I'm simply not cutting corners about critical mass sleep. Again, I use that term. The point at which you begin to get sleep on that level is the point at which your brain begins to recharge on special levels. And you will feel it in your cognitive function. Really and truly, you will feel that in your cognitive function. Now, how you get sleep, how you take it to deep sleep, again, as always, you know my perspective. Try the herbs. That's wonderful. But all these things, you know, you even talk about brain fog. You talk about memory. You talk about cerebral function. Try your herbal remedies. In my estimation, the herbs should complement all the good knowledge and fundamental practice application that you accrue over time that represents a fundamental understanding of how to change the mechanism. Getting deep sleep is the equivalent of saying getting very healthy. If you line up 1,000 people with insomnia, after they fail the usual herd of herbal remedies, it's the ones that go on to get healthy that start to regulate their sleep patterns. Somewhere along the line, you know, stereotypically, classically, one of the great signs you're looking for in a healing as a person begins to resolve serious issue is when they start sleeping 8, 9, 10 hours. Believe me, if you've been sick a year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, if you've had chronic health concerns for a long time, you're going to hit a phase where all you're going to want to do is sleep. And usually by that time, the sleep is very deep. You look forward to sleep because that's when your whole world opens up. And this is what I'm talking about. Without it, people suffer from brain fog. Now, that's without deep sleep. How many people suffer from sleep deficit? How many people are out there running around looking at dietary things? Yeast. One of the classic issues has to do with candida and brain fog. And this was shot around the world from 1960 on because of certain books that circulated. And I'm going to discuss that in a minute. But how many people are looking to the digestive causes when really it's issues of sleep? Speaking of which, if we're going to bring about digestive causes, food, does it give me brain fog? I know that this carbohydrate gives me brain fog. I know that this gluten-based food gives me brain fog. Before you look to carbs or plant food or any food as having chemicals in it that cause brain fog, and we'll get to that, you have to look to the insulin spike. So please remember that. If you're out there with brain fog thinking it's related to diet, the first thing you do is look to your insulin response and you look to your blood sugar. You get them tested if you have to. Now, after that, rather than think about food as the cause, I want you to focus, if you can, on picture 24. The small intestine. The 30 to 32 to 34 to 36 feet of small intestine are all lined by villi. Those are those little finger-like projections that shoot out of all three parts of the small intestine that absorb the food. I've got a great picture on picture 24. The intestinal villi. Now, here's the key. People know diet causes brain fog. People know that diet causes bloating. People know that diet causes all sorts of things. But what people don't get, what is definitely not getting in to either the holistic community or what's not getting in to the allopathic community, is that that nerve plexus down there, that the nerves in your gut control your digestion. The brain in your gut. Now that's a little maxim that's circulating. The brain in your gut. The enteric nervous system. Meaning that there's a very strong connection between the nerves in your brain and the nerves in your gut, between the GABA in your gut and the GABA in your brain, so on and so forth. But I want to advance that. I want to advance that to a more functional understanding. And what that means is, unless you have truly, in the functional sense of the word, not in the mythical sense, in the functional sense of the word, balanced your autonomic nerves, unless you've really learned to relax your being, you're not relaxing the nerves to your gut. And your brain-gut connection is faulty. How many people I have seen over the years with leaky gut? How many people I've seen that talk about food allergies? I mean, it's horrendous. Had someone in this week, food allergies. Food allergies off the chart. Really, it's not food allergies, it's a brain-gut connection that needs horrendous, that's in horrendous condition. It means that down there, those villi that absorb the food have to be stroked through your parasympathetic nerves, through the relaxation side of the autonomic nervous system, come messages into the villi that regulate their function. If you're on the website, straighttalk.cc, picture 25, great picture. The lumen of the small intestine, the intestinal villi, all the epithelial cells lined up, and in between the epithelial cells, we have very, very microscopic spaces called gap junctions. Spaces between the cells that compose the villi that have a job, that job being to absorb the food. So your HCl and your pancreatic enzymes and your bile and your so on and so forth turn the food to chyme, turn it liquid, and then these little villi absorb the food. Now, how those villi work and under what impulse they optimize their function, controlled almost completely by the brain-gut connection. It means if you've got high anxiety, and you see, this is the thing. Most people don't know that. They don't associate their imbalanced emotional states, their rage, their anger, their grief, their sadness, their fear, their despair, all the reasons they have to be upset about the lot they find themselves in. It starts when you're little. It goes on to middle age. It ends up at the end. For many people, unfortunately, it's the same way. And what we're sending down into the villi every second of our life are negative messages. And those little finger-like projections don't dance right. They cramp up. They twist around. They don't absorb the food, and they begin to decay. And in that decay, you have, again, the beginning of the inflammatory process down in the gut. And the spaces between those epithelial cells that comprise the villi, those spaces enlarge. And as they enlarge, larger compounds get into the blood. So food that should be digested, that's only partly digested, gets into the blood. That wreaks havoc on the brain. So yes, brain fog is related to diet. I notice that when I eat this gluten, it gives me brain fog. I notice that when I eat this food, it gives me brain fog. Everything gives me brain fog. Yes, that's true. And so you've got a lot of people running around trying to change the diet. Honestly, there are exceptions, but honestly, 90%, I will tell you, 90% of the people looking to change the diet to fix the brain fog should be fixing their emotional life. in plain and simple English. Really, I want to stand up on my desk and scream this. I have been around long enough to tell you that in any given day in America, if you line up all the people that talk about brain fog and are looking for dietary solutions, yes, there are some real dietary solutions. I mentioned one, the high insulin spikes. Yes, there is such a thing for some people as gluten intolerance. But I am telling you, by and large, on any given day, the mass percentage of people who have brain fog as a consequence of leaky gut really need to have their emotional life straightened out. Now, that's what we mean by understanding the enteric nervous system. It's what we mean by understanding the relationship between the brain and the gut. These people will say, well, what do I do? And you have to say, in all honesty, you have to let go of that emotional pain. And they will say, how do I do that? I don't know how to do that. And see, you're opening up Pandora's box. It's why it's so much easier to look for that culprit in the food. Look for that food that's causing the problem. And you go on this long, idiotic journey of looking for the food or the group of foods. And of course, to make matters worse, food does play a role. You may primarily, fundamentally suffer in the way I'm talking about, but to make matters worse, to complicate things, you will get some return by watching what you eat. But this is my point. My point to you all who suffer from this. You will not get resolution of the problem. You'll get minor improvement. And minor improvement is where you will stay. And unfortunately for many, you'll stay there for the rest of your life. Now, that is the reality of this. So let's kick back to brain fog. Brain fog that's been diagnosed by somebody off the notion of leaky gut. And of course, leaky gut is a matter of eating the wrong foods. Some of you are looking for that parasite. Somebody told you there's a parasite or some unknown bacteria or your flora are all off. And all these things are so important. I got to tell you, think again. I'm going to really slam this one. Rarely do I meet people with enough parasitic infection, rarely, to create the leaky gut issue. Now, that's a stir in the holistic community. But my fellow practitioners, really take a hint and ask yourself, how much of this so-called leaky gut with the brain fog associated have you really seen fix itself? I don't mean improve. I mean fix itself. The reason is, 9 times out of 10, you're dealing with sympathetic, dominant clients. And they don't have a clue. It's not their fault. So we're not pointing fingers. But what it really means to relax, like your animals relax, like your little children relax, what it means to do that is really something that, by and large, in American culture, we have forgotten, or worse yet, we don't ever even learn. Would you go to the war-torn Middle East today and expect some of the little kids there to know what it is to wake up to the sun shining instead of hearing bombs and mortar outside the homes they sleep in? Would you expect them to understand what it is to relax? Would you expect people throughout the world who starve each day, who die in the streets, to understand what it is to wake up and relax? Well, it's odd. It's paradoxical. But urban life today is often filled with that. We're producing such a stress-ridden culture that nobody really knows what it is to truly relax anymore. Go out there to the countryside for a week or two or a month. Go up to Canada for a month. Get away from it all. And you'll know what I'm talking about. So, again, our culture, the culture you live in, your job is to begin to understand on deeper, more fundamental levels what it is to develop a health practice where you balance those parasympathetic impulses to the digestive tube in a way that puts those villi back on track. And if you looked at it that way and you evolve through the process, this is where you'll see those gap junctions close, where you'll really see your digestion improve, and then where you'll see your brain fog go away. High insulin, high blood sugar, high cortisol. High cortisol due to emotional anxiety. Emotional anxiety due to not being able to relax. Anxiety to the point where the brain in your gut, the gut in your brain, those relationships are corrupted and the intestines explode. They inflame. Undigested food in the blood triggering immune responses, invariably ending up with brain fog as the brain inflames the partly digested food and all the side metabolites of it that end up in the brain. You know, the brain is a finicky kid. The brain has all these protective barriers, blood-brain barrier being one of them. I mentioned that. Why? It's just one of the things that God put there to protect one of the most sacred places. The relationship between the blood and the brain, you know, this is something that eludes us. The blood and the brain have a special relationship. The brain, through the hypothalamus, through the autonomic nervous system, is always eyeballing the blood. This is why the buffer systems in the blood are so precise. Talk about pH variations in the blood of 0.1 or 0.2 at most. Why? Because God put buffer systems there. Those buffer systems are there to make sure we have homeostasis in the blood, so we have homeostasis in the brain. That's key. That's key. That's super key. The blood and the brain have to have relationship. Now, the intercellular space, the space between the cells, that's not patrolled with the same degree of specificity, with the same degree of precision. Because you can wall off, you can section off what's going on in your breast. You can section off what's going on in the meat of your pancreas. You can section off what's going on in the posterior inferior lobe of the liver. You can section off what's going on in the deep lobe of the lung. You can section off what's going on in your bone marrow. Your brain is kind of distanced from many body parts, but your brain is in close association with your blood. So the blood-brain barrier, so the buffer systems of the blood. Very, very important to understand, your brain, like your heart, so let's talk organ here. Your brain, like your heart, like your the organ, your heart, are finicky. They're precocious. They're easily disturbed, and they're ready to give you a signal that they're easily disturbed. Half the heart palpitations every day is simply the heart telling you it's not happy with some aspect of your blood supply, of what's in your blood. It's legion for people to go into detoxifications where their heart starts beating off the chart, starts having a regular rhythm. Very common finding is people detox. Brain does the same thing. The brain lets you know it's having an experience that concerns it. And so what you call brain fog is simply a signal that what you're circulating in the blood and that the overall condition of the brain is not up to snuff. It's not so much that brain fog is the issue. It's so much that brain fog is a signal to you to take a look at what affects the brain. There's a difference between how you'd see that. Oh, I don't care what affects the brain as long as I don't have brain fog. See, your brain's not going to let you get away with that. Perspectives. Perspectives count. And then, of course, on to sleep. Depth of sleep. We're having a superficial, semi-useless conversation when you're dealing with brain fog or cognitive disorder or pre-dementia We're having a superficial conversation when we're not having the conversation about setting the goal to get you to enjoy deep sleep. And usually what those conversations are in the holistic department are conversations about how to give you straight sleep, non-interrupted sleep. And this is how bad it's become. I just have to say it to you. And I say it to you because when you get these physiological systems in true order, as I'm defining it for you, you see miracles. You want to see miracles? Align the systems of health as they were meant to be aligned. The systems of health. When I say systems, I mean sleep. I mean how the bile flows. I mean the balance in the autonomic nerves. I mean how your organs of excretion function at optimal levels. I mean the systems. The cranial rhythm is a system. And of course, the next system that we're going to get to is the relationship between your occiput, your atlas, and your second cervical vertebra, epistrosis. I can't even pronounce it anymore. There's a term for it we learned in chiropractic school, epistrophis, whatever it is. Occiput C1, C2. Now, I put pictures on the show, picture 19, picture 20, picture 21. Take a look at picture 22. If you're on the show, if you're on the website, straighttalk.cc, take a look at picture number 22. You'll see the back of the skull, the first and second cervical vertebra. Those three bones, occiput on the skull, first cervical vertebra, second cervical vertebra, those bones are supposed to separate and pump. As you separate them through stretches I've defined on many a show. So this is in the first place. My regular audience knows it's not the first time I've stressed this. Getting separation and motion between the occiput C1 and C2 implies brain massage. The correct alignment, the correct pumping mechanisms of your neural tissue are dependent upon the pumping mechanism between the bony structures, occiput C1 and C2. And this is where we get jammed up. You want to talk brain fog? There. Look there. Look to your biomechanics. And that's why I put picture 23 on. One of my favorite pictures, picture number 23. Now look at that. Extreme left. That's you at 20. Middle picture, that's you at 50. And that's you at 80 or 70. Anterior head carriage. The forward progression of the position of the head as you age guarantees you compression between the occiput C1 and C2. Those areas do not pump anymore. They don't fasciculate. They don't separate. And once they compress and fail to separate, you do not pump your cerebral spinal fluid. You cannot clean your brain. This isn't a little thing. This is everything. Forget your diet. Forget your sleep. Forget your stress. Forget everything I said. Learn what I'm talking about here. That pumping mechanism between the occiput, C1 and C2, is what, through the dural tissues, pull the brain. When you can manipulate those areas, the torque or the tension of the dural tissue that goes three-dimensionally around the brain, between the brain and underneath the brain, those connective tissues will pull the brain. They will compress it and let it go. Compress it and let it go. They will move it around. They will make it dance. It's brain massage. Mobility, proper biomechanics between the occiput C1 and C2 is brain massage. It's like taking out your brain. You know, while we look at nutrition, structure is so, so important. If you could massage your brain like you could massage your breast, if you could massage your brain each day like you massage other body parts, if you could pull your brain out, roll it around in your hands, and put it back in your skull every single day, we wouldn't know what brain fog was. We'd never know what brain tumors were. We wouldn't know what Alzheimer's is or Parkinson's or any neurodegenerative disease. I don't care what you did to your brain. That's how important physical structure is. Osteopathy, chiropractic, yoga, tai chi, qigong, kung fu. In essence, that's what these disciplines are trying to say to you. Look at those pictures there. Where are you? And you know where you are. Most of you know that head's come too far forward. Brain fog, what to do about it? Show 323. Insulin, blood sugar, anxiety, sleep. The relationship between the occiput C1, C2, the relationship between your brain and your gut. In a nutshell, learn those mechanisms, take right action, and watch your brain fog go away. I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. Those of you with health concerns know who to call. 714-850-1007. 714-850-1007. Do it today. Prevent it. Get it before it's too late. Don't hesitate. 714-850-1007. We'll see you next week.
Okay, that's a wrap. Don't forget to get to Dr. Medici's website at drmedici.com to look at the pictures and review the show as often as you wish. See you next week.